morning. I'm Cassie Whittier, and I'm the last of the residents to speak today. I actually grew up here in Ogden, so it's been a privilege to be involved in this for the first time. Went to Weber State University and then to University of Utah for medical school before coming back here to my hometown to do my residency. And I will be headed out to Tanner Clinic this summer in August to practice, so I'm excited about that. So today we're going to talk a little bit about weight loss medications. And this talk kind of came from some of my experiences as a resident with some attendings who are very familiar with these medications and others who try to not prescribe them or absolutely will not prescribe them. And I began to kind of question where that difference lies, whether it's the age of the prescriber and some of the experiences with issues with these drugs in the past. And so some of the data that came out of this is where this talk came from. So I have nothing to disclose, no financial disclosures. The outline will start with a little bit of obesity trends and medication history, controversy regarding these medications, the data behind treatment, local statistics, and then go through some solutions, some potential solutions for improvement in our treatment of obesity. So it's no secret that obesity is a problem in the United States. We all know that. We all deal with a lot of the comorbidities that come along with that every day. But the surprising thing that came along with this, looking at this data, was that a third of patients that have obesity are only a third of those are actually diagnosed with obesity or receive some sort of weight loss treatment advice during their visits with their primary care or other providers. And we know that there is benefit to weight loss, but it's down to the percentages of 5 to 10% down below their baseline where we actually see some of the improvements in the cardiometabolic outcomes. This map comes from CDC's website in 2012, and some of the stats were quoted a little bit earlier. But this is the prevalence of obesity in the United States, obviously. And you can see, sadly, that the 15 to 20% range is nowhere to be seen in the United States. But Utah does fall within the second to lowest tier, so that is good for us. The more interesting thing about this is that this is only self-reported obesity, so they take this off of surveillance data. So potentially the numbers could be even higher if most of our patients are not even receiving an actual diagnosis. Then maybe there are some of these that aren't even being picked up. So there's a very troubled history regarding these medications, and I obviously wasn't practicing in the 1990s and didn't experience this, but I heard about it when I was younger. And a lot of this comes from the controversy regarding it comes from the Fen-Phen crisis that developed. And this is the cover of Time magazine from 1996, and it's talking about Redux, which is actually the dextroisomer of fenfluramine. It's dexfenfluramine, which is the other component of Fen-Phen besides phentermine. And even at that point, looking at the bottom here, they ask, but is it too good to be true? And it was the next year after this in 1997 where it was pulled off of the market because of concerns for pulmonary hypertension and valvular regurgitation. A lot of lawsuits ensued after that. A lot of money was given to patients and their patients' families. Some of these led to even deaths. And we kind of swing back and forth, problems, a new medication comes out, then we find side effects and it gets taken off the market or people stop using it. But more recently, we're going to talk a little bit about the phentermine-topamax combo. And this is Dr. Oz talking about this, which my mother, unfortunately, listens to Dr. Oz quite a bit and follows his advice quite a bit. And so this is the new silver bullet. And there's a lot of other things that I found kind of searching for this where they're concerned about this, that maybe we're repeating history here. So additional concerns regarding the medication, especially phentermine, is that initially patients might have some weight loss, but then the weight loss eventually slows and then plateaus, and even with increasing the dosage of the medication, which increases the side effects, they may not actually lose any further weight. Patients often regain the weight that they lost while they were on treatment, and by the end of the treatment period after they're taken off of it, they're back to where they started with having been on the medication and the side effects that come from that. And many people who are treated with weight loss medications have a very unrealistic expectation of what's going to happen with the medications. They feel like they're going to go from a BMI over 100 to the Barbie dolls that we saw earlier. And that's very unrealistic, and it's important to make sure the patients understand what potentially could happen with these medications. So they actually looked at a study of women that were undergoing treatment for weight loss with these medications, and they had them identify their goal weight, their dream weight, happy weight, acceptable weight, and disappointed weight, depending on what their initial baseline body weight was. And after 48 weeks of treatment with these medications, only 47% of them did not even achieve their disappointed weight. So they didn't even get to the lowest tier of all those weights that they identified, which is very disappointing for a lot of people. So the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force actually put out a statement that says that patients should be told that these medications are going to, at best, lead to a modest weight loss, so nothing more than that. So patients are understanding what could potentially come from this. And as far as research concerns, most of the papers that I looked at, the more recent ones, actually discuss this, that most of the studies that the numbers come from actually have a very significant attrition out of the studies, lots of people dropping out. A lot of the studies employed run-in periods where patients are actually kind of selected out because they look at their behaviors, whether or not they are going to be compliant, and if they're potentially a non-responder, and then take them out of the study before even running the trial. And I know my personal patients are often very non-compliant and not very good patients sometimes, and so they wouldn't even be included in this data series. And then down at the bottom you can see, so the last observation carried forward is often used as well, where if a patient drops out of the study, the last data point is used. And so you, with this, it's kind of opposite of this this table here, this chart here, that you're seeing with the last data point that they continue on and maybe would have lost more weight or maybe they would have gained more weight, but that potentially there could have been a difference, but we're seeing them as if they never left the study. So there actually is a law which covers all controlled substances called the Utah Controlled Substances Act, and it covers these medications, which I wasn't aware of, that there was actually a specific section on this prior to starting this research. And it is a Schedule IV controlled substance and is recommended for the treatment of excessive weight with increased health risks. And they recommend it only in combination with comprehensive weight loss programs, so that includes nutrition counseling, pretty thorough evaluations. We'll talk a little bit more about that. So the evaluation is very important, and that the patient has made a substantial good faith effort to actually lose weight prior to being started on these medications, not that they have never even tried and this is the easy way to go. That the benefits of the medication outweighs the possible risk, side effects, that they don't have comorbidities related to their obesity that would put them at risk with taking these medications. And they even recommend doing an informed consent and letting the patients know that we don't actually know a lot of the long-term outcomes of these medications, so that they're aware of that before starting treatment. They require close supervision and monitoring, seeing these patients frequently. If you're giving them medications, you should be overseeing it very closely. And that they're making ongoing progress towards their goal weight or maintaining their weight is one of the most crucial things, and we'll look at some data locally about that. And if, more importantly, if the medication isn't actually working, to take them off of it, because there's no benefit and just risk to the patient if they're continued on it without any additional weight loss or maintenance of their weight. So looking at, this is the kind of general consensus regarding recommended practice and how to go about prescribing these medications and when to stop them. So initially in the first month of treatment, we would want to see a 2 kilogram weight loss or 1 pound a week for the first month. And if they're able to achieve that in that first month, then the medication can be continued. And after that, the goal is to reach a 5% weight loss by 3 months of treatment. And this changes a little bit with the Phentermine-Topamax combos, which we'll talk about in a moment. And after that 3 months, we want to see that weight has actually been below 5%, remains below 5% to be continued on the medication for maintenance. So to talk about phentermine a little bit, it is commonly the most prescribed medication for appetite suppression in the United States. It was approved in 1959 for the short-term treatment of obesity. It is not approved for long-term treatment outside of 12 weeks, according to the FDA. And the concerns around this, a lot of the bad side effects from fen-phen came from the fenfluramine fenfluramine portion of that. But phentermine is not without risk because it is a stimulant. There's also potentially risks for tolerance and dependence on the medication because of that, although that's much more rare. The studies, looking through 5 or 6 different studies and large studies that they did, actually showed a pretty significant weight loss, so getting below that 5%, even up to 15% weight loss. But many of these studies had a very significant calorie restriction, even down to 900 or 1,000 calories per day. So in combination with the medication, we're also cutting the calories back quite a bit, and surprise, surprise, they lose weight. And most of the weight loss that they see happens within that first 6 months, and then after that point, less so. Topamax, was approved by the FDA in 1996 for seizures and then migraine prophylaxis in 2004 with a side effect of weight loss, but it was studied in monotherapy and found to have too bad of a side effect profile if it was used in the dosages that they would have to use to obtain the adequate weight loss. It does work in a couple different ways. It mediates appetite suppression and leads to satiety and also even changes the taste of food, but it also works independently from the weight loss on some metabolic factors, including insulin action, skeletal muscle, glucose transport. So it actually has an interesting action that's totally separate from the actual weight loss and appetite suppression. So the most recent of not the most recent, there's actually a newer one since this, but Qsymia is one of the more commonly recently prescribed medications. And it came out in July 2012, was approved by the FDA for long-term treatment. And currently, Qsymia, or this combination of topiramate and phentermine, is the only long-term treatment outside of orlistat that's approved by the FDA outside of 12 weeks. It allows for lower doses of either of the medications, so there's fewer side effects that come from either of them because of the lower doses. There's an improved weight maintenance outside of that initial treatment period where phentermine would be more appropriate, that they can actually maintain their weight. And then they often have improved lipid and glycemic index profiles and sleep apnea with the weight loss too. Ideally, it's best used in obese men and postmenopausal women. It does have some teratogenic effects, both of them. Phentermine and topiramate both are category D for topiramate and category X in pregnancy. Not used in patients with hypertension or coronary artery disease, so making sure to filter out those patients. The goals are still the same, 5% weight loss, but you want them to be on the highest dose before you consider it a failure, but they still have to meet those initial criteria of the 2 kilogram weight loss to be continued on it, or they're considered a non-responder. The patients typically lose weight up to 1 year and then maintain that weight better after 1 year, but after that point, they're less effective at continued weight loss. Because it's new, there's not as much data on the cardiovascular safety, and so that's something to keep in mind in making sure that you're choosing the right patients for these medications. The price for Qsymia, obviously, with it being new, is much, much, much higher than the two medications separately. Topiramate and phentermine separately are $10 each for a one-month supply. And then Qsymia is a few hundred dollars. So looking at the data really quickly. I looked at some data from 99 prescribers in the urban north region, so this region that we practice in, and came up eventually with 1,764 individuals that were prescribed these medications, either phentermine or the combination. And so these are the regions, for those of you not familiar with this area, that we looked at. So as far as prescribing practices, you can see that the majority of patients that were prescribed these medications were prescribed by a male provider. And even correcting this with the amount of female providers within that 99 versus male, it's still 2 to 1. Oh, keep doing that. Still 2 to 1, so 19 per female provider and 40 per male provider. Pretty equal amount as far as the duration of prescriptions. That doesn't necessarily mean they're getting prescriptions every single month, but that was the first to the last prescription. And then the age groups, the younger age group tended to have a shorter duration of treatment, and then the middle age group from 41 to 56 actually had the majority of the prescriptions. So the most interesting thing with getting this data is that not all of the data points or the phentermine prescriptions that were prescribed were associated with a weight during their visit. And I was very skeptical of this, so I actually started going through some of these visits, and there's maybe partial vitals, but no weight associated with giving them the prescription. And with the data mining that we did, it actually looked for an average of anything anywhere else within the system within 30 days before the prescription was given. So even if it wasn't done at that visit, just looking for something. And often that was not the case in the initial 10%. And then another 30% had one weight on the first prescription, but no follow-up weights. So initially had over 3,000 data points, or patients initially, and then came down to 1,700 that actually had both data points. So looking at this chart, this is goes by duration of treatment. So starting with those who received 1 month of treatment up to 32. And it actually went a little bit further than that, but some of the data later on was not very good. Half of the prescriptions are prescribed to individuals for a treatment of 9 months or less, and then the other half are for 9 months or greater. So not necessarily sticking with, and 99% of these are phentermine prescriptions. It's unknown whether they're with a separate Topamax prescription. And then looking at average weight change, if we're looking for the 5% weight loss to be considered effective, The first time that we reached that on average with these patient groups who received these durations of treatment is at 17 months of treatment. And so up until that point, the average weight loss ranges for some of the best, almost 2% or a little bit over 2%. But some of them actually have an average weight gain for 15 months of treatment, that they're actually gaining weight during that whole time, or potentially going down and then back up and above their baseline. So we talked about that a little bit. And potentially some of the bigger numbers later on are because we're filtering out some of the non-responders in that early group, I hope. 44% of the individuals that were in the study actually gained weight during their treatment. And then 31% did achieve that 5% weight loss and maintained it throughout the treatment period. So how do we measure up? With weight gain, we averaged a 7% weight gain of those who gained weight. And with weight loss, we averaged a 7% or a little bit, almost 8% on both, weight loss of those who actually lost weight. And overall, all of the patients combined, we gained 0.03%. Looking at follow-up, this is one of the biggest concerns with phentermine, is that after the medication is stopped, potentially patients will regain the weight, and you see this happening here. So in that first month, there was a little bit of positive weight gain, and then by the second month, you do see some potential continuing of the effect of the medication or maybe the interventions that they started. And then by 6 months out, we're back to where we started with an average almost null, almost equal to where we started at our baseline, a little bit weight loss at 0.13%. So the major difference between the studies and real life here is that some of our patients don't take them as prescribed. There's a lot of prescriptions that the patient follows up 3 months later, and it was a one-month prescription, so potentially not taking it every day. But mainly with the patients that I've seen is just the lack of control over dietary and exercise, some of those interventions, and the fact that we're not necessarily talking to our patients as much as we should about those things. So the last point here is that there are some options for outpatient health coaching that is actually not very time consuming, and we can use a lot of the care guides and care managers, a lot of this patient-centered medical home stuff that's starting to be implemented to help us out with this. One of the proposed models included 3 office visits and then 7 phone-based virtual visits to kind of coach patients through some of the health barriers that they reach that kind of keep them from losing weight or keep them from doing these things. And the models that were most successful integrated goal setting, they integrated barrier identification, feedback for these patients, and really close monitoring so that patients know what's going on. You're helping them kind of get through some of the struggles of this. And they looked at in-person versus remote information as far as talking over the phone about this education, and it didn't make a difference for this type of conversation. So having that conversation over the phone is as effective. So in summary, one of the main points is that phentermine is not approved by the FDA for long-term treatment of obesity. Currently, Qsymia or these two medications separately or orlistat are approved. And there is some pretty good data behind Qsymia or that combination for weight maintenance if you're going to start a patient on this type of medication. The benefit should always outweigh the risk of the medication, making sure that you're really doing a thorough workup of the patient before starting them. And then following them closely, making sure that they have weights when you're giving them a weight loss medication is really crucial. I think of it as like diabetes, that we would not get an A1C before we started insulin on a patient because it could be detrimental to the patient. So we want to make sure that we follow that closely. And then potentially implementing some of these models that are coming out within the last couple of years to use in our own clinics to help educate our patients about what they can do to help with weight loss. So that's all I have. Thank you.